Time gap. He's Jules. Blue skies over West London. Sort of. I haven't really checked. But Jules, what a show, because we have proper legit title race in Germany. Proper legit title race. Slightly less so, perhaps, but still. 1 point gap. Seven in the Premier League. Yeah. But we're going to start with Real Madrid winning the Copa del Rey. They've got a huge game coming up in midweek on Tuesday night against Manchester City. They're playing Osasuna in the final. Osasuna, we know, a team that defends well, that works hard. Some people are going to say they overachieved being where they are this season, but they got some big results this year. They come out as winners, and a bit of good fortune, perhaps, on both goals. But overall, in terms of chances created, I thought Real Madrid deserved this,
Although I thought Osasuna was more in the game than maybe we anticipated before, that it was more of an even final than everybody thought. Okay, they're going to, Real Madrid are going to smash them. They're too good, so much better. They scored after 120 seconds or something like that. It was crazy, that first Rodrigo goal. So when you 1-0 down after 2 minutes in the final against Real Madrid, nobody gives you any hopes, really. But Osasuna fought back really, really well. And in the end, they lost 2-1. They came back to 1-1. If they had been able to keep the score 1-1 for a little bit longer, because Rodrigo scored again in the 70th minute. So after that, it was kind of over, even if the end was a bit nervy. But yeah, I thought they could be proud of themselves, and so could their fans.
We were talking about this off-air before. You love rattling these numbers off. I think they're slightly meaningless.
Come on.
Tell me about the titles.
It's just that Karim Benzema won his 25th.
I love how you start with Karim Benzema. With all due respect, it's Real Madrid's 100th title.
Yeah, Real Madrid's 100th.
Can we start with a big number?
No, because I was going to say that Karim Benzema has now won a quarter of all the trophies that Real Madrid won. Okay, Real Madrid number 100, which is in itself incredible. Their 20th Copa del Rey as well, which is pretty special. They played 40 finals, 20 wins, 20 defeats. Pretty good in terms of balance. And then,
so what does that mean?
I know.
It's not really good.
It's not good 2020, but I just like the fact that it's 40-2020. It's amazing. And then Karim the Dream with the 25th title with Real Madrid. It's incredible. It's a quarter of what they won. It's like what Marcelo did before him. I just think, I know you say it's meaningless because they count the Super Cup, the Spanish Super Cup, the European Super Cup, but there's still trophies. You have a trophy when you win it that you can lift. I just think 25 trophies for Real Madrid is just incredible.
And I think he's won every single one with either Cristiano or Ancelotti or Zidane. No, just saying.
Here we go. Why are you dissing him?
I'm not, although he did have a quiet game. I kind of feel like this season, if you look at his overall numbers, they're high. But it seems like he comes in bursts, and then he takes a quiet game, and then he comes in bursts again.
There may be not the consistency game to game, for sure.
The match winner in this game for me, or the guy who, for better or for worse, is a complete X factor, is Vinicius. He created both those goals. Yeah. Renata got the assist, and I know there were deflections and whatever. But the reality, what I love is, for all the tactics that we have in the game and stuff like that, there's nothing to stop a guy who's really, really fast getting the ball, taking on a defender one-on-one, creating an overload and creating havoc. And there's few players in the world, maybe even more than Mbappe, who I think is a better rounded player. Mm. There's nobody else whose game is so much about that as Vinicius. And I don't say it in a negative way, saying he's one-dimensional, but he uses that then to score goals, to create assists, to create disruption.
Yeah, incredible it was. I mean, again, it's only Osasuna, but to be fair, they've always defended quite well this season. But he could go inside, he could go on the outside. You can come close, and like he did in the first half, he dummies the ball. That then makes the defender behind him goes round and get the ball. It's just, you just don't know how, I think, to, not just to stop him, but how to kind of handle him. Which is most importantly, where your position is, what the best position is against Vinicius. And because they find him all the time, and they look for him all the time, and they can play into space, they can play into feet. Like I said, he can go inside, outside now. It's just so difficult, and one of the keys of the game against City, of course, is going to be Vinicius.
This is the Vinicius stat that gets me. This season, he has 10 yellow cards in La Liga.
That's crazy.
Again, in the big five European leagues, Tati Castellanos is the only one who has more, and he has 11 among among wingers and
in that kind of position.
Right? Obviously, defensive midfielders will get more. That is a ton. And if you look at the list of ones that have the most, it's generally guys who play for bad teams who don't have much of the ball, or it's often like burly strikers who, you know, physically engage defenders. Like Ivan Toney, I think, is like eight. It's guys like that. He's got 10 in La Liga. He's got 5 in the Copa del Rey. I, off the top of my head, I'm guessing he must have played maybe, what, 40 games in that competition
more,
at
maybe,
that time?
Yeah,
in the Champions League, where Real Madrid have played 10 games, he only has 1.
Yeah.
Is this a thing? Does it mean he gets officiated differently in the Champions League?
I don't know if he's the officiating. I think the environment is certainly very, very different. What he has in Europe than what he has in La Liga, where he's clearly the target everywhere, especially away from home. I'd be interesting to know, not for now, but how many of those 10s were at the Bernabeu or away from home? And I wouldn't be surprised if most of them were away from home, where clearly the provocation on him is quite high, the environment is quite toxic. We mentioned the racial abuse, of course, but even behind that, beyond that, if we can call it that way, where I think they just wind him up all the time. They go after him, they go and go, and if it's not a foul physically, like, you know, I kind of smash into you, then it would be the verbal provocation, all of that, which I don't think is right. And we've said that before. It's not me trying to defend Vinicius, it's just that this is not an environment where you should be playing football when you're one of the best players in the world, or even a random player. And I think certainly in Europe is very, very different. We've seen a lot of the Real Madrid games in Europe this season where you never had that kind of tension that you could see in La Liga's game, for example.
Yeah, it is a good point. Also, obviously, when Real Madrid play, like Barcelona too, especially away from home, you know, it's like the game of the season for a lot of the opposition.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got that.
Yeah, but it's the same for City or PSG or Bayern Munich, and none of their forwards have that kind of yellow cards.
And that gets me to wonder, this can become an issue. This can become an issue because yellow cards, first of all, you're one mistake away from a red card. I know he doesn't do much defending or track back at all, but, you know, it is something that has to be in your mind. And second of all, obviously, you pick up suspensions. I find it weird that I feel like over the last 2 years, he's matured tremendously as a player on the pitch and in the contributions he gives. But this is something that, you know, with 2 years of Ancelotti, I would have thought this is something you stamp out.
And he's still young, there. You know.
He's not Rodrigo. He's not Rodrigo young. What, is he 23 now?
Yeah, but he's still young for, I mean, again, is there any other players in that kind of position and situation than Vini this season or in the past 2 seasons that is the target like that
well, wingers, players who are targeted because they're the best player on their team?
Yeah, but look, I mean, yeah, but look at Jack Grealish. Okay, Jack Grealish, there's a lot of fouls committed on him, but there's none of the rest that Vinicius is going through right now. I think he's a unique case in a way, and that's why I think maybe I think your point is valid. I think he will learn a lot from what is happening. I think he will mature even more on how to not to react on the pitch, not to fall into the provocation, not to do this. And it'd be interesting to see if the pattern of yellow cards continues in next season, for example, or not. But surely there will be a point where he will be able to handle it better maybe than what he's done. I mean, better.
It just seems that these yellow cards are, like you touched upon this before, they're often avoidable. You know, it's dissent. Yeah. With the referee, it's arguing with the referee, it's winding up opponents, and, you know, these are things that you don't need to do. You know, wind them up after the final whistle if you need to troll them, for example. There's an element to that discipline, and there's a reason why so many of the greatest players in history don't get a ton of yellow cards.
Yeah.
You know, I know Messi got sent off in his first ever appearance for Argentina, whatever, although that was kind of a silly call. But I don't know. I just think it's something to consider.
It's very interesting.
Especially in an age of VAR as well.
Yeah.
You know, I would have thought some of the abuse that he gets when he gets fouled would have come down relative to what it might have been a few years ago. You know, this isn't the age where people could kick lumps out of the opposition and the referee wasn't looking and they'd get away with it.
That's for sure.
A word on Luka Modric, because it's one of those eternal debates. We took it for a bet that they'd extend his contract for another season. He's obviously been productive in many, many games when he's been fit this year. Mm. And you feel that he could have a bit part role next year, maybe appearing in big games, giving you something different. Instead, we're not really It appears he hasn't extended his contract yet.
Not yet, no. But neither has really Toni Kroos officially or Karim Benzema either. But I wouldn't be surprised if all three... I mean, Benzema is going to stay. I think Kroos will stay too. I'm pretty sure that Modric will stay as well.
I'm wondering if maybe these people haven't extended their contract, especially Modric's case. Benzema may be a bit different, but they want to know who the next manager is and what the... And whether the next the new manager is the same as the old manager, whether Carletto sticks around another year, which, you know, he may do.
Would you believe Florentino when he says that Carlo is staying? So he's got another year left on his contract. But Florentino probably has said things like that before that didn't actually happen.
No, exactly. So I don't think it matters what he says, whatever he likes. Yeah. I mean, in the run up to the Champions League, what are you going to say? Like, no, Ancelotti's definitely leaving, you know. And equally, I wouldn't expect Ancelotti to come out and say that he's leaving should he want to leave. Yeah. You know, like if he wins another Champions League, riding off into the sunset, to Brazil, is not a bad way to go out.
Oh no, it's the best way, and then they build him a statue as well.
Well, but it also takes off. It also means that next season, you're rebuilding the team because I think we all agree, those three guys you mentioned, Modric, Kroos, Benzema, they're all getting older. Mm-hmm. Real Madrid have all those guys on expiring contracts. They have big calls to make.
Yeah, yeah.
You can go do that and you can kind of, you know, hit the reset button, start with a new manager and have a guy who's been successful there before and is only going to be there another year.
Yeah.
So I think it would make sense.
Definitely.
I would imagine these guys are waiting and maybe Real Madrid are also waiting to see how things unfold.
And again, there's no really any rush. I mean, you can still sign Jude Bellingham, which... looks more and more likely day after day, and keep Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. You know, I don't think it would harm you to have another year of Luka Modric, even on his salary. They can afford Bellingham and keeping Kroos and Modric, 100%.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
I'm not 100% on that in the sense that if you bring in Bellingham, right? When we've talked about this before, right? All of a sudden, it's Bellingham, Tchouaméni, Valverde, Camavinga, right?
Yeah.
These are younger players who are going to need to grow together. You're going to want to give them a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
So given that I think Dani Ceballos has been really, really good this year.
Yeah.
And you may want to keep him around too. And he can do, not as well, but he can do some of the things that Modric and Kroos do in terms of providing that quality, that creativity. That's five guys there. I think you can carry one other veteran, but given the kind of money that Kroos and Modric are on, I'm not sure it makes sense. If Bellingham arrives, then to add another guy.
I think Camavinga would be almost as a left back than a midfielder anyway.
So Ferdinand Mendy, thank you for that. I think Ferdinand
is going to leave the club in the summer. So then already that's taken one out of that midfield kind of rotation, if you want. Not all the time, maybe, but for most of it, especially if Carlos stays. I don't know. I don't think it would be a bad idea to keep both Modric, if they can, of course. Both Modric and Kroos, and having still that young bunch of midfielders behind or with them, and then you can do a very clever, smart rotation.
All right, let's do a brief exercise here. Champions League semifinal.
Woo!
Milan and Inter, if we were to do percentages, it's a toss-up, yeah?
Yeah, I'll go 50-50. Maybe 55-45 Inter.
Because of Leao, right?
Yeah, Leao and the form that Inter have been, really.
But Real Madrid and City... A lot of people have City as not overwhelming favorites because they still respect Real Madrid's, but as solid favorites.
Yeah,
you're going that way, 60% or above, yeah?
Yeah, 55-45 at least. And then the most optimistic can go 60-40. I think that would be maybe a little bit too much. I just think that unless something miraculous happens again like last season, I just don't see personally how, and you know how much I love Karim Benzema, I don't see how this... Real Madrid team can trouble City over two legs with the second leg in Manchester.
I'll tell you who can see how.
Yeah.
And that is Rafa Benitez.
Okay.
Now, he didn't come out and predict that Real Madrid were going to beat City, but he kind of put up a bit of a game plan about how this game could unfold, right? And he cited, I mean, two of them I think are pretty obvious, but it's good to remind yourselves of it, right? One is... counterattacking quickly.
Of course.
And getting somebody between the lines.
Yeah.
And in that sense, Karim Benzema dropping off, yeah. maybe Modric stepping into that space. They have people who can do that, and obviously Vinicius running behind.
Yeah, and Rodrigo, which is, and, to be fair, City is the perfect team for Real Madrid to play against because they can give them, leave them the ball, City will have a lot of the ball, and Real Madrid will hit them on the counter.
I'm also not sure, like, I mean, I was watching this game on BT Sport in, here in the UK, and somebody says, like, oh, well, you know, you'll get Kyle Walker matched up against Vinicius. He's just as fast. And I kind of feel like, no, he's not just as fast as Vinicius. He's 10 years older than Vinicius.
Yeah.
Like,
he's still very fast.
He's a phenomenal athlete and yeah. whatever. Equally, Vinicius is Vinicius. So this idea that, like, you know, and Walker's had an up and down season this year.
Yeah.
So,
but he's the best one to match up with Vinicius. Whether Vinicius can still...
I wouldn't say he's the best one. I would say he's the only one to match up with Vinicius. Frankly,
well, no, because you could put Akanji... They can put another player there. But he's the best one of
right,
what they
if
have.
You move, if you play Akanji in that role, then you've got an Akanji-shaped hole in the middle, right?
Well, but Akanji played right back against Bayern Munich against Leroy Sané. So Vinicius is better than Sané and quicker maybe. But
no, I know. But then you have to make an adjustment inside, right?
Yeah, Stones and Diaz.
Right. And then...
So there's no Ake
at left back. Stones stepping into midfield.
So Walker... Yeah. Which I think is going to be the plan from a City point of view.
So that's kind of an obvious one. The other thing he reminded us of is set pieces. Real Madrid are physically, he said. I haven't gone back to look at it, but it does seem to make sense. They're a bigger, physically stronger team than Manchester City.
Really?
Well, Rafa said so.
Because
and Rafa's won the Champions League.
It's funny because I had that conversation with Neda Manua the other day when we were at the Premier League together. And looking at the City-Arsenal game, the difference in physicality between the two teams was, I thought, quite striking. Because a City, if you take Diaz, Stones, Walker, even Akanji, there's four big boys. Rodri is huge. Haaland is huge.
Right.
Okay, then you've got KDB, Grealish, I'll give you that.
No, but here, take those six, right? I don't think Rodri's tall and strong.
Yeah.
He's not necessarily the terrifying, he's not John Terry, you know, heading balls into the back of the net.
No, who is for Real Madrid, though? Militao?
Benzema's pretty good.
Yeah, but not on set pieces.
He's a pretty good header of the ball.
No, yeah, but not on set pieces. Benzema never scores a header on corners or wide free.
I didn't know this was a rule, but...
No, I'm just saying. Like, you said that Rafa Benitez says that on set pieces, Real Madrid would be dangerous. Well, because Militao scored against Liverpool in the quarterfinals?
I guess when you put it that way, you may have a point.
Because if it's Alaba, Militao... I mean, Militao is suspended the first leg anyway. Right. So it would be... So no Militao, who you would have said is the best
would
header
be,
of the ball.
Probably, yeah.
So already he's not there in the first leg.
I think Benzema is the best header of the ball, but...
Yeah, but on set
you've decided that he's not allowed to score
on set pieces, I'm just saying.
Okay,
right. So, I mean, I don't know where Rafa got that set pieces threat, but Militao won't be the biggest threat at Real Madrid because he's suspended. So, okay, you've got Karim. If Alaba plays a centre-back, Camavinga a left-back, Carvajal a right-back, neither of them can. Okay, Rudiger, I give you that. Modric can't, Cruz can't, Valverde can't really, he's not really that
kind
of...
really his thing.
Where is the threat coming from?
Okay, maybe Rafa got...
Maybe
Rafa got that specific. Sorry,
no, I'm
Rafa.
Sorry, Rafa, I'm sorry. That's not what I meant. I was just wondering.
I mean, it's possible he also... I guess he also means, like, free kicks.
Yeah, of course.
Manchester City have a bunch of people who are pretty good at taking free kicks, too. So yeah. I don't know that this is necessarily an advantage.
Okay, my question for you. Would you start Gundogan?
Yeah, 100%.
So you start Rodri, Gundogan, KDB, and then what? Bernardo, Haaland, Grealish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the first leg anyway, yeah.
I mean, I just wonder if somewhere there's
are we going to see the Pep overthinking curve?
No. Just you put Bernardo in midfield and no Gundogan for. I mean, Gundogan is in great form. So
I don't know that you need to do that away from home. And in fact, and this was a good transition to Rafa's other thing. Rafa said that what makes Real Madrid really good is obviously they don't press the way City do.
Yeah,
but they can press intermittently and they can do it very effectively. And then they can also have long spells of possession. So in other words, they can do it both ways. And he came out, and he's talking about himself, as Rafa often does.
Of course,
He said, you know, my best teams, whether it was Liverpool, whether it was Valencia, we had teams that could do that. It's something that I really believe in, and I think it's something this Real Madrid team do really well. Now, we can go back and debate. I don't think his Valencia team were necessarily that good in possession,
no,
the way he remembers them. Or indeed his Liverpool teams either, frankly.
Yeah.
But it is something that Real Madrid are much better rounded that way. Real Madrid can have, you know.
Yeah, you're taking
as read that Rodrigo's going to start. But let's say he doesn't. If you have a read that, you have a man advantage in midfield. You can make Man City chase you around, maybe pick up some yellow cards, foul you a lot, you get set pieces, and you can strike, and you can strike on the counter. You can do that in transition when you decide to press.
Yeah.
I think making those calls at the right time, that's going to be the real challenge for Ancelotti.
Yeah, I think you're right. Against Chelsea, for example, we saw the moments in the game where they were doing that very, very effectively. You're right. I'm more worried about how they get out of the City press, because I don't really think they've got patterns to beat press like that. The way they do it is that they're so good individually and so clever as players that they can, you know, you press them high and they will always find an amazing touch from Modric or Cruz or Benzema or Vinicius, someone like that, to get out of the press. But it's not something that, you know, if they press like that, we do this, we can build in a three, we can build in a two, that kind of stuff. It's not as maybe structured that way, but they still could be very good at it. And you're right, I think Valverde is the key player for me, because if he's everywhere, and
if he starts, which we don't know if he starts.
We think, but he said after the final on Saturday that he was tired. Then if that midfield from Real Madrid can be efficient in pressing City when they decide to, from a mid block, for example, but then also can be the City press, which I expect City to press quite aggressively, even at the Bernabeu on Tuesday night, then I think Real Madrid will have a big chance, because once they beat the press, then they will be all over City.
Like you said there, that's the thing. If they beat the press, or the other way to beat the press is just you lump the ball into space, and that takes us back to Vinicius, right?
Yeah.
He takes us back to Vinicius, takes us back to Benzema, where, you know, he may not run behind everybody, but if there's a ball in the air and it's Benzema against Ruben Dias and Stones, who are very good, I think it can still be 50-50, not just that Benzema takes it down, but that Benzema takes it down and then makes an intelligent pass, right? To get a quality possession out of it. So in that sense, I think they are a good match. But yeah, obviously, City are going to be, to most people, slight favorites.
Yes, you think so.
The other wild card I throw in there.
Rodrigo?
No, it's the goalkeepers.
Yeah.
I think Courtois has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think Courtois' ceiling is higher than Ederson's.
Yeah.
I think Ederson's been up and down. You know, could this tie be decided by goalkeeping errors as well?
Yeah, maybe. Or even not just errors, but saves that you would make, again, like Courtois made, the one on Grealish last season.
Humans don't normally make.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Could be like that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Madrid. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Manchester City stay top of the Premier League with a 2-1 win over Leeds. But Jules, this ending was a lot nervier than it should have been.
It was. They were 2-0 up, cruising to go by Kagundoan. creating chances. Erling Haaland could have scored.
81% possession. Are you kidding me?
But Big Sam is the greatest manager in the world right now. You know, he's as good as Pep. Yeah. Of course, he could win the treble. And then a mistake by Akanji. Rodrigo scores, and then the last 10 minutes become a bit like, oh, a free corners, a few free kicks, that kind of stuff. In the end, they were much, much better than Leeds. But yeah, they could have made just the afternoon a bit easier for them. For the
squeaky bum time.
Yeah, exactly. Erling Haaland got an earful of abuse from Pep Guardiola, Gabby, for letting Ilkay Gundogan take the penalty at 2-0. Are you okay with that? I mean, I don't know. Are you okay with him letting the pen or with
Pep? I have no problem with him letting Gundogan take the penalty. But I'm going to explain in a minute why I think Pep reacted the way he did, right? People say, oh, no, because he knows it's fine margins and blah, blah, blah. Look, it's not like he went out there and had David De Gea take the penalty in his place. Ilkay Gundogan's penalty record is 13 out of 15 for club and country. All right, Haaland's, it was before he missed this one. Yeah. Haaland's was 30 for 33, which is better. But, you know, Haaland also missed a penalty more recently than Gundogan. So I don't really have an issue. I think the reason he did that is the old coaches thing. Jules, when you were having a bad game and you kept shanking balls left and right and missing all your shots on goal and your chances, if you had a good coach, he wouldn't tell you, all right, Jules, it's not your day. Stop shooting. No, he'd tell you, keep shooting, right? That's what you tell. It's like basketball, any sport, right? And I think Pep saw, I think Haaland had a really bad game in terms of finishing.
Yeah.
He could have had a hat trick, right?
Yeah,
easily. He took six shots all over the place.
Yeah.
I think Pep said, I want to plant in this guy's head, I don't care. You need to be confident. You need to keep going. Which, by the way, I don't think he's lacking for confidence. He might have seen it as like, I'm being kind to Gundogan. He's got a chance to get a hat trick. But I think Pep says, I'm going to stamp this out. You're the main man. You're going to keep shooting.
But then do it before the penalty is taken then. Everybody could see that Haaland was giving the ball to Gundogan. Pep could have stood up then, shouted, no, you take it, instead of waiting for the penalty to be missed and to say to Haaland, you should have taken it.
And maybe he was distracted. Who knows? Arsenal keep pace with City, Jules, winning 2-0 at St. James Park. How about Odegaard? And more than that, my boy Georgie in midfield.
Outstanding performance from Jorginho. Man of the match performance.
Outstanding
for
performance
from
Arteta for playing Jorginho ahead of Partey. I don't care if Partey's playing badly. You're the same morons going out there. Jorginho gives the ball away. Jorginho's too weak. Jorginho's a feat. How about you actually win something and you wash your mouth out with soap before mentioning Jorginho's name?
All right. Overall, I thought the game was amazing. Anyway, should have finished 4-3 to Arsenal because of the chances that they created. Two teams that went and pressed and played and did really, really well. And I think for a team that has only lost one before at home, and it was against Liverpool, Newcastle, for Arsenal to go there and win like that was very, very impressive.
I think I'm right in saying Liverpool are the only team to have beaten Newcastle in the Premier League since 2021. I think Liverpool might have done it twice, but still. Newcastle played well, by the way.
We need to give them a shout out too.
Made a big save. This couldn't, you know, they hit the woodwork twice. This could have gone another way, but huge reaction from Arsenal.
What a player
Odegaard is.
Yeah, magnificent. Big win for Milan as they beat Lazio 2-0 at San Siro, Gabby, to stay within 2 points of fourth place in Serie A. But how concerned should they be about Rafael Leao?
I'm going to start with Leao because he came off after just 11 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a muscular injury. It's touch and go. We'll know more sort of as the story develops. If he can't play, hugely concerned because it's a derby. It's a special atmosphere. You know this game's going to be tied. These are two very evenly matched teams. And in those situations, you need the guy who can go and create out of nothing. Who can beat a man. Like we talked about before with Vinicius. Nobody at Milan, probably nobody in Serie A does that better than Rafael Leao. As for the game itself, Lazio I thought were terrible.
They were bad. Well, goal by Theo though.
Theo did that thing where, you know, he gets the ball deep, just starts running, beats players, the Theo Express, and just unloads it from outside the box, scored a goal like that previously against Atalanta. First goal, a defensive mistake from Lazio. Lazio never back in the game after that. Really disappointing, I think, from Lazio. West Ham beat Manchester United 1-0, and that David De Gea mistake proves very costly. Jules, Erik ten Hag says he wants him to stay. I suspect you still feel different.
Yeah, so I'm going to repeat it again. There is absolutely no reason for Manchester United to extend David De Gea's contract. I know he's got the most clean sheet this season in the Premier League or something like that. Ten Hag keeps repeating the same stuff. He's not good enough. He's not good enough with the ball. He's not even good enough anymore on his line. This is a pass from Saïd Benrahma, who I've got a lot of time for. This is a pass. It's like a back pass. It's me passing the ball to you, Gab. How can he not stop that ball? It's unreal.
I think he didn't expect the shot to be so weak.
The pass, you mean?
The pass, yeah. Whatever it was. But this is just a bad game from him. Also, the Antonio one where like he goes and he gets all like, you know.
So you know what I'm encouraged with? Is the fact that Ten Hag used to say when Cristiano was there, oh yeah, I want him to stay. It's very important. And so I'm hoping that the same happens to David De Gea. Come on, United.
Right, 1 point lead, one game in hand.
Yes.
Liverpool behind him. Are they going to be okay?
I'm not so sure. I'm really not so sure.
Liverpool have
all the momentum.
Liverpool still not really firing on all cylinders, maybe. But
United are winning last four Premier League matches. You know, it's difficult. Bayern win away to Werder Bremen 2-1 and keep their 1 point lead at the top of the Bundesliga. Gab, were you impressed?
No, I'm not impressed. No. Neither are most Bayern fans. Neither was Tuchel. You know, tried some interesting. I think. Look, the main takeaway for me is there's two things. One is this team has stopped scoring. 3 goals a game in all competitions under that Julian Nagelsmann, who was so terrible, they absolutely had to get rid of him. If you take away the Tuchel's first game against Borussia Dortmund, when they were gifted 3 goals, they're averaging like 1.1 goal a game since then. To me, that is the single biggest thing, right? The goals have dried up. And by the way, Lewandowski wasn't there this season for Nagelsmann either, right? So that can't really be an excuse.
That's true.
Tuchel's trying different things. Some Mazraoui's playing pretty well, but then again, he already grumbles as well if I don't play regularly. Gravenberg got his only second start of the season, did okay. Cancelo's more involved. He's trying to kind of reinvent the team on the fly.
That's true.
He should have never been put in this position, and I really hope chickens come home to roost for some people at Bayern. Liverpool, as I mentioned, are a single point behind United. Well, of course, have that game in hand after Mo Salah gives them a 1-0 win over Brentford. Jules, 6 wins in a row.
Yeah, 8 unbeaten now, 6 wins in a row. Only City really have matched that up. Everybody around them have lost points, drawing, losing. And they're not, and you're right, they're not always the most convincing. No, but they win. You find a way of winning. Trent was very impressive, I thought, again in midfield, to go back to the discussion we had on the last show about him being a midfielder permanently or keeping that kind of hybrid right back, central mid positions, if you want. And Mo Salah scored again. You know, they could have had more. They could have conceded, probably, of course. It's not perfect by far, but you take the wins now. And you know what? If you were United, you would be worried, I think.
To be fair, if Darwin Nunez could finish, which he didn't really do much in this game.
Exactly. And sticking with Liverpool, Gabby, you predicted the national anthem played at Anfield on the day of King Charles' coronation would be booed, and you were right.
I think everybody knew this.
Everybody.
Everybody knew it was going to happen. Shame on the Premier League for putting Liverpool in this position because it's a lose-lose. People, and hey, look, even Jordan Henderson is pictured on television singing along with the anthem, right? Jordan Henderson is English, right? Nothing, he should be free to do that. And then he gets booed, and then people have to go at the fans. Don't put people in this position. People have a go at Jordan Henderson for singing his national anthem, right? Well, why put him in that position? Why put Liverpool in this position? Jurgen Klopp, I thought, was diplomatic. Says, thank God we have free speech. There's a lot of people here who have an issue with the monarchy. And by the way, for those who don't know, I don't think it's just the national anthem issue. The national anthem is literally God save the king.
Yeah.
So if you happen to be among those Liverpool fans, and it's not all Liverpool fans, who have a serious problem with the monarchy, you're not going to want to sing that. And you may well boo that, right? It's not like the anthem's like, oh, long live Britain, are we great? Britain this, Britain that, right? Which is the way most anthems are. This is specifically about the king. So it was just so unnecessary to put them in this position.
So avoidable, for sure.
Paris Saint-Germain beat 3-1, and their lead is 6 points with 4 games to go. Jules, no Messi, no Neymar. But a lot of good luck with those first 2 goals.
Come on, leave me alone. Just leave me alone. Leave me alone. I don't care. We take that. 25 shots we had in that game against Troyes. Not good. I could probably play for them. But you won. Vitinha,
Ruiz, Verratti,
it doesn't matter. They're there, you know, some of the kids played. It's good. Let's move on. Let's move on. Speaking of Messi, Gabi apologized to his teammates in a weird room with weird lighting and to
and
the club.
He was wearing a suit.
You've never seen him wearing a suit. Yes. And to the club for going missing and obviously missing training to fly to Saudi Arabia. He said, I sincerely believe that they had a day off. And that his trip, which already been postponed twice, could not be postponed again.
Look, the reason I wrote this question for me rather than you is because I think there's enough people out there who,
yeah,
who've given you a really hard time over this. I think it's very, very simple.
Thanks for the abuse.
You have a contract. You have a pre-existing contract. Yeah. You or your lawyers or your dad, whoever signs your contracts for you, knows that when you sign an endorsement contract elsewhere, right, your existing labor contract takes precedence over that. It's you or your dad or your agent or your helper's responsibility to make sure you don't violate your contract. Yeah. He violated his contract. It's as simple as that. Can we knock on the head this idea that Paris Saint-Germain called him when he was already on the plane to mess with him, to humiliate him,
yeah,
whatever reason? None of this happened. Otherwise, no, he wouldn't have apologized.
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah, maybe he did sincerely believe it. You should turn it around to the people around him who do his scheduling, his personal assistants, and say, guys, what the heck were you thinking?
Yeah. Samuel Ealing Jr. and Dusan Vlahovic give Juventus a 2-0 win. That was your question about Atalanta. It doesn't matter, which means they move into second place.
Jules, were we too tough on Allegri?
I mean, I don't think that was a great game, to be fair. Atalanta had, okay, maybe not the biggest of chances, but they had a lot of shots. They had most of the ball, 60%. But it's a good win, certainly. You don't have to play well sometimes to win, especially games like that matters. As we said, the top six in Italy all met each other between the two Roman clubs, the two Milan clubs, and then Juventus against Atalanta. So six of the top seven, of course, behind Napoli. Really good win. It's not convincing or...
It's a good win. It doesn't mean that people haven't been hard on Allegri because they played rubbish football all year.
Yeah.
It took them a long, long time to go and actually play the kids, and the kids have shown. And if there's one thing, I think Allegri's going to stay. I think he probably should go.
Yeah.
But the legacy is going to be, hey, guys, we've invested in these kids. Let's play them because some of them are actually really good and can contribute.
Yeah. In the Atalanta game, Gabi, there was some ugly abuse directed to Dusan Vlahovic, who was later booked. What's going to happen?
Yeah, so this was late in the game. Vlahovic scores a goal to make it 2-0.
Lovely goal. Goal.
And then they have these songs, these stupid songs, basically where any kind of player from the former Yugoslavia gets called a gypsy, regardless of their heritage and stuff. And Vlahovic, and I think the referee handled it in the right way, Vlahovic goes to the referee and says, hey, can you hear this? And he says, yes, I can. So he applies the protocol, he suspends the game over the loudspeaker, they tell them to stop, otherwise, you know, there's going to be sanctions. Then the game starts again. Vlahovic, at the end of the game, going around, basically like waving his arms as if to gee up the crowd, he got himself booked for that. Now, they've already said, this is a bit like the Lukaku thing,
that yeah,
if the booking means that he's going to get suspended later on, then they're going to take the booking away. I don't think you should react to the crowd. I know it can be difficult to do. But especially in this case, this is serious abuse that shouldn't happen. But I mean, these are also professional players, right? You can't have a precedent where you allow things to happen because bad things. So I think that policy about booking players who react has to remain. Now, yeah, there can be exceptions to it in extreme situations. To me, this was not an extreme situation. That said, really unacceptable, stupid words from Gasperini. I feel like saying that he should know better, but he doesn't know better because this is the kind of person he is. He may be a good football coach. He's not a very clever human being, I think, when he comes out and he says, well, no, there's, you know, they were just winding him up. That's not racism. We've got Pasalic and Jim City. Jim City, by the way, is Albanian, right?
Yeah.
The implication being what? That like these guys, because you have Slavic players, then you're allowed to call Vlahovic a gypsy, and then Vlahovic isn't really a gypsy, so is it really an insult? I mean, this is stupid. No, you cannot have insults based on somebody's ethnicity or sexual orientation or religion at football games.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, whether you're racist or not, I don't really care. That's a problem for society. I just want to have an environment at football matches where you don't have that kind of language. Gasperini let himself out. I'm curious to see what Atalanta do, because, as you know, I've been hugely critical of Juve over many, many years. But they were right in giving the two lifetime bans straight away. They were right, by the way, and nobody reports on this because it's after the fact, 171 banning orders were issued by law enforcement on the back of Juve's cooperation for the racial abuse against Romelu Lukaku in that game. This is actually real action, real things. I would love for Atalanta to go and do something similar, or for something similar to happen. Borussia Dortmund destroyed Wolfsburg 6-0 and even miss a penalty along the way. Jules, 1 point back and flying.
Yeah, very impressive. Every time, pretty much, they went forward. They could have scored. Jude Bellingham was very impressive, carrying the Yemi. I mean, everybody scored, literally. Like, everybody who had the ball at some point in the last 30 yards scored. Well done to them. Putting that pressure, keeping that pressure on Bayern. Harry Kane gets the only goal as Tottenham beat Crystal Palace 1-0. Gab, he's now past Wayne Rooney. And only Alan Shearer is ahead of him in the Premier League all-time scoring table.
As you know, I don't care about the Premier League's all-time scoring table because I think it's stupid, because football didn't begin in 1992 and Shearer scored a bunch of goals before the Premier League era. What is relevant is he's 21st, he has 209 goals.
Yeah.
If he scores another 80 goals in his career, a minimum, which I think he can do because he turns 30 this summer, he will be fourth on the all-time list. Ahead of him, only Dixie Dean, 310, Steve Bloomer, 314. And Jimmy Greaves on 357. That is impressive. Jules, Frank Lampard Jr. has won his first game in his second stint as Chelsea manager after six defeats.
Yeah.
It's a 3-1 win over Bournemouth.
It is. And there have been times, the games before, and we said that, where they played well and didn't deserve to lose, maybe, but still lost. In this game, maybe the win is a little bit fortunate, let's be honest, but it's a big win. It's hugely mentally, psychologically. I love the Chelsea fans thinking, we're staying up. That kind of stuff is good. It's good for him. I'm sure it's good for the players, finally, to have a bit of positive around. It could have gone the other way, but like games before, could have gone Chelsea's way and didn't. So again, you take that. And then the next game is Leeds. And then after that, it's three really big games to finish, but yeah.
They're not big games, they're relevant games. Just playing out the strain
United City and
the season.
United City and Newcastle to finish the season. They're not big games.
They're important for United City
they're
and Newcastle.
They're huge games.
They're playing for stuff. They're not important
they're
for Chelsea.
They're huge games. But well done. Well done. For the stick that we gave him. Big win for Inter as well. 2-0 away to Roma. Gab, their fourth place. Mourinho making headlines again as he's tired, because he's much more than just a manager, you know.
Yeah, he was on a roll with this one. Look, the context is Roma have a ton of injuries. He did something to prove the point. He took some of his injured players on the bench with him. I'm talking about players, not just players who are injured and can only play a little bit, like Dybala, but players who are injured and can't play at all.
Yeah.
Like El Shaarawy, Gini Wijnaldum. He names it to the bench, names a bunch of kids to the bench, sends all the kids on at the end to prove his point about how depleted his squad is, how he needs more players. And then he comes out and, you know, there's already some tension between him and the ownership.
Yeah.
He'll be in the third year of his contract. Obviously, they have a big Europa League coming up, and you already won a title last year. And then he gives it the usual Mourinho thing. He's just like, oh, I'm tired because the work I do here is much more than just my work as a coach and a manager, blah, blah, blah.
Jose.
It's up to the club to speak. Eyes all down. He got a demented war of words with Renzo Olivieri, who's a former manager. He's really old now. He's the president of the League Managers Association in Italy. So he's elected president, right? And in the mid-80s, Olivieri was caught up in a match-fixing scandal. He received a 3-year ban. After 2 years, the ban was overturned, and they said this guy is completely innocent. He could not have known. He was unaware, blah, blah, blah. But Mourinho obviously didn't read that far into the Wikipedia page. Olivieri had criticized Mourinho when Mourinho had said, this referee I had was the worst ever, and wore a mic. And he said, like, look, you know, we should try helping referees, blah, blah, blah. So he had to go to Olivieri. He says, like, you know, oh, how does somebody who was match-fixing get to be president of the League Managers Association? Well, because he's elected, simply put. So he's picking these stupid fights.
They're seventh in the league now.
They're seventh in the league, as you mentioned. I think they've been unlucky with injuries. On the positive front, you can't change the fact he won a trophy last year.
Yeah.
He's very close to winning a trophy again this year. They play Bayer Leverkusen, of course, and then play the winner of Juventus and Sevilla if they reach the final. But all this stuff is so unnecessary. Man. All the constant, the headaches and so on. And it's obvious. He's trying to put pressure. The fans are totally with him on the ownership to do something. Yeah, Friedkin can cut more checks. But then the financial fair play people are going to come to him and say, hey, Mr. Friedkin, you know, you got a problem. So I don't know. I mean, people find this entertaining. I don't. I wish he would just focus on what he does best, which is coaching the team, achieving results, and getting everybody together. Mm.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lens beat Marseille 2-1 to take second spot behind Paris Saint-Germain. Still not overly worried, right, Jules? No?
No, they're 6 points behind. It's not so much...
You'd be more worried if Marseille had won because they would have been 5 points behind.
Yeah, it's not so much that. It's what an incredible game that was on Saturday. We said it was that kind of a Champions League playoff final, really, if you wanted, because it was second against third. Now Lens are third. Second, 2 points clear of Marseille with a slightly better goal difference. And with four games to go, if Lens can just keep that second place, they will go straight into the Champions League next season when Marseille will have to go through the qualifiers, which is always tricky. But an incredible game, Seko Fofana with the first goal, which magnificent goal. Paris born and bred, of course, Seko Fofana.
Although not the best Fofana in Ligue 1, yeah?
No, I think he is the best Fofana.
The Monaco guy?
Youssef Fofana hasn't had a good season as good as Seko Fofana, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But there was a point where we had Wesley Fofana, Youssef Fofana, Seko Fofana, all great Fofanas in Ligue 1. But I don't know how many would be left. I think Youssef Fofana would leave Ligue 1 next season. But for this game, it was amazing. The atmosphere was crazy. There was a bit of controversy because Marseille, Alexis Sanchez scored a goal that was disallowed for a foul that was maybe not too evident on Kevin Danso. It was just great. Great spectacle.
Let me help you with that. Not foul. That was not too evident. That was not a foul.
Everybody says it was a foul. Even to be fair, some of the Marseille players say like, okay.
Maybe I've been watching too much Premier League.
No, I don't know. But yeah, it's there's not much in it for sure. For sure. Victor Osimhen scores the only goal as Napoli return to the Maradona's champions of Italy and having a big party. But Gab, other clubs are already circling and some suggest that Cristiano Giuntoli, and even Luciano Spalletti might not be back next season.
What? Yeah, two different stories. Yeah. So Giuntoli obviously is the guy who's done the tremendous job. Obviously,
sporting director.
He's the sporting director. They lost their three best players, cut the wage bill 30%. You know, he's the guy who brought in Kim and Kvaratskhelia and stuff. And, you know, it's a ton of praise. He's been strongly linked to Juventus right now, which is inevitable.
Yeah.
He's also been linked with some clubs in the Premier League. I don't know how it's going to work out. It will make me slightly uneasy with him. He's done a tremendous job, but he's only ever worked at a high level. I mean, he's worked at other clubs before, but in Naples, sometimes that can be a difficult transition. The Spalletti situation, so this is so Aurelio De Laurentiis, the Napoli president. He has an option. He had an option for next season on his contract, right? Obviously, he's won the league. He would expect to sign a new contract and have a discussion about how we're going to strengthen the team, whatever. Instead, he got one of those, like, you know when you get, like, that mail, but it's, like, secure registered mail, you have to click on a link to open it? He gets one of those from the club, which says, oh, by the way, we've decided to exercise the option and bring you back next year. And he was kind of like, well, wait a minute. We're in the middle of a party and stuff. We've just won the title. We can't get on the phone and talk about this. You just kind of decide, like, we're exercising your option. You're going nowhere.
But he will stay, right? Surely.
I would imagine he will stay. Spalletti is an odd cat. I don't know how seriously he might feel a little bit disrespected by it. I think even the fact that he shared this bit of information with everybody else tells you about his state of mind right now. I don't think it's about money. It's about getting paid. It's about respect. From Spalletti's perspective. Yeah. If he feels disrespected, who knows? Wild stuff in Ligue 1. Ligue 1, the place to be this
Incredible.
Weekend. Olympique Lyonnais come from 4-1 down. It was 4-1 down. It was nearly an hour played.
Yeah.
They win 5-4 against Montpellier. I don't know if that's not the amazing part, or that is amazing in itself. Yeah. I don't think I have ever seen, in many, many years of watching football, two players score four goals. Your boy, Alexandre Lacazette.
Yeah.
And, of course, Eli Wahi.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, the last time it happened, I mean, the only time it happened in French football history was in, back in 1974, when Reims and Nice played each other. And
Paris Saint-Germain was just 3 years old.
And Carlos Bianchi scored four, and Delio Oni scored four as well. Incredible stuff. But it was just a game, like, you could start watching, and yeah, Montpellier beat Monaco 4-0, for example, last weekend. So they were in good form. For Lyon, it's a bit hit and miss. You never know. You watch them, but you never know really what kind of Lyon are going to turn up, although they've got talent, Cherki, Barcola, Lacazette, etc. And then after 55 minutes, 4-1 for Montpellier, it's just like, wow, okay, what's happening? And you just recover from the four goals by Eli Wahi, who's 20, who's one of the most promising strikers in France right now, who's going to move to some bigger and better things in the summer. And then
people think the club whose shirt you're wearing right now, which is Milan, yeah, by the way, for those who are listening on the podcast.
Yes, for example, Milan, but I think clubs in Germany, club in England, in France as well, everybody is looking at Eli Wahi and the talent that he has. I mean, Dejan Lovren, who plays for Lyon now, said, like, after the game, he said, that striker for Montpellier, I mean, I think he could have said his name, but didn't say his name. Said, that striker for Montpellier really is amazing. He's got everything, like, if he was discovering him, but... Why, he's amazing. He's got 32 goals already in Liga in his career. Only Kylian has more at the same age. So wonderful. And then when you think, okay, this is already great to digest, then Lyon come back into the game. 4-2, Barcola assist for Lacazette. 4-3, Lovren had a 4-4, Barcola assist for Lacazette. And then it's 4-4 with only a few minutes to go. We're in injury time, added time. And then
and the game
penalty.
Is over.
The game is over.
They call everybody back.
And then, like I said, it's very clever in the way he gets a penalty. Christopher Julien, the former Celtic defender, somehow fouls him. And then it's a penalty in the 100th minute. And like I said, for his hat-trick, scores in the top corner to make it 5-4. The stadium exploded. The last time a team won 5-4 in Ligue 1 after being 4-0 down or 4-1 down was Marseille, when Laurent Blanc, now the Lyon manager, was a player at the time, and he was against Montpellier.
And Lyon... But Laurent Blanc back then was presumably old because the man was
young.
Yeah,
he was playing and scored a penalty in that game. But Marseille were 4-0 down and won 5-4 at the Vélodrome. What? Incredible. Really, really wild stuff. Incredible. Go and check the highlights because it's really, really worth it. Kevin Campbell scored the only goal as Leipzig beat Freiburg 1-0 again and leapfrogged the opposition into third place. God, this was big in the race for top four.
It was big. Leipzig, very much the form team right now. Yeah. And again, don't let the scoreline fool you. Leipzig had a bunch of chances in the first half. Freiburg a little bit better in the second. And then it took this Kevin Campbell goal where Kevin Campbell is one of those players who personally I never liked just because he's so idiosyncratic. Check out the goal. Like, you see, yeah, this dude, like, told you, like, running through the midfield, you know, tackles bouncing off him, plays a 1-2, finishes. They missed some huge chances earlier. Yeah. You know, and this is the same Leipzig team that was so prolific last weekend, of course. They much as they're unlikable for many reasons, they'll be in Europe next year.
They will be.
Union Berlin, however, screw it up, much to producer Freddie's disappointment,
sorry,
against Augsburg, as they lose 1-0 away and don't take advantage of Freiburg's defeat. Jules, they're sinking fast.
Yeah, it's tough for them. Gab, you're right. And to be fair for Augsburg, in the fight against relegation to stay up, it was a huge win for them, but very disappointing performance from Union, and obviously results, because it's not completely over. There's three
level
teams
on points with Freiburg.
Yeah, exactly. So they can still do it, but it's true that it doesn't look like they have much momentum right now. Liverpool are heavily linked with Jörg Schmatzke, the Wolfsburg's former director of football. Gab, does that make sense to you?
It's weird because Schmatke, like, when I think of the people who had this role at Liverpool, right? Michael Edwards and Julian Ward. What do they have in common? They're, you know, they look like the guys from, like, the computer help desk.
Yeah,
I'm not
exactly
saying they're nerds,
the data.
You know, they're, like, serious, younger, blah, blah, blah. Schmatke is not, you know, he's older. He's not one of those guys who gets mentioned as being like, oh, isn't he a genius director of football? You know, he had a, I think he was a goalkeeper in the 80s and 90s, kind of like fell into it, did very well. I think he was at Cologne before Wolfsburg. Left Wolfsburg in February to spend more time with his family. It seems like a weird appointment.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's bad at his job.
No.
But in terms of the model that Liverpool have had until now, he certainly seems like somebody who's a lot more old school.
Yeah,
you know, kind of the data, smartest guys in the room type, you know, gig that has taken Liverpool to their recent success. I don't know. Maybe he's Jurgen Klopp's mate. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. He's had a difficult relationship with some of his managers as well when he was in charge. So,
he, it's a bit historically, strange. He's been a very, very outspoken, colorful character. So, yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but this story seems to be very well sourced and reported.
Yeah.
Dante has signed a contract extension in Nice, which means he'll be back next season when he turns 40, following in the channeling his inner Vitorino Hilton.
Exactly.
Jules, he has started all but one game this season, which is incredible to me.
Really incredible, and often in the back three, which is okay. You know, we see Thiago Silva playing a lot in the back three. But not just for what he does on the pitch, but everything outside as well in the dressing room. And the hair, of course. What a great captain. What a great servant to Nice and to football in general, but also for his teammates, what a guy he is. And as people know, we love when players play in the 40 and when they still play well. So well done to Dante. I think he deserves a lot of credit indeed. The Daily Mail reports that the Premier League will launch a weekly show co-hosted by Howard Webb in which he will discuss refereeing decisions. Gab?
So this is a show actually produced by the Premier League. So it's going to go out, if you watch the Premier League, it's going to go out to Premier League territories all over the world. Howard Webb is the head of the referees in England for the PGMOL. I think this is a bad idea, Jules. And the reason it's a bad idea is this isn't like having an ex-referee. Isn't like, you know, when Peter Walton, Dermot Gallagher, these guys come on.
Yeah, and explain, you know, yeah.
Yeah, some of them always defend the referees.
Yeah.
But you're their boss. So I think you have to be so very careful in how you speak. I mean, my boss, our boss, sticks up for us when we're in trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to defend them all the time because you also have to be held to account. But that should happen, I think, behind closed doors. If you want to get somebody external to do it, I just worry that either this is going to result in Howard Webb saying things that then he later regrets, if he's honest, because he says, I shouldn't have mentioned this in public. Or if it results in him just defending his guys all the time. I'm a big fan of Howard Webb. I love the transparency side of it. I don't think it should be the role of the head of the PGMOL.
Maybe not, but it's a step forward. It's interesting because you would want more transparency and people talking, even maybe like we see in Germany, actual referees coming on the show and explaining
why. I'm okay with the referee coming and explaining his own decisions. I'm totally fine with that. I just don't know that it should be the boss of the organization.
Yeah. Let's see.
Our boy Vincent Kompany has signed a 5-year deal with Burnley after, of course, leading the promotion this year.
Yeah, I think that puts an end to the rumours about his future and maybe the interest of some Premier League clubs for Vinny. He's done an amazing job. We said he's very happy. I think he wants to show what he did with Burnley and take them to the Premier League and see how well his ideas, his methods, his philosophy fair in the Premier League. So I think he's right.
I still think he wants to manage a Premier League club next season. But that club is Burnley!
Exactly. Sports in Catalonia reports that Barcelona are willing to entertain offers for Ansu Fati. And Jorge Mendes is hard at work already trying to get him a move, with one possibility being sending him to Wolves in exchange of Ruben Neves and €30 million. I'm sure Ansu Fati would be delighted to the idea of going to Wolves. Okay,
I am not dissing Wolves here. But come on now. The reason for this is not about Wolves or whatever.
No.
It is that you're Jorge Mendes. You're so well connected. You're basically, by putting your story out there, you're basically saying, oh, look, the only offer we have is from my club, Wolves, right? Because lest we forget, Jorge Mendes' agency, Justy Foot, in what I don't think should be allowed, their biggest shareholder is also the guy who owns Wolves.
Exactly.
How that, it's a walking, talking conflict of interest. Yeah. Also, if Barcelona need to cut costs, I'm sure Ruben Neves is on a hefty salary.
Yeah.
Great player. Also, Ruben Neves plus $30 million. Ruben Neves at this stage of his career, on his wages, how much do you think he's worth? 30 million, 40 million?
Yeah, maybe a bit more. He's an outstanding Premier League midfielder.
He's only got X number of years left now. He's been young for a very long time, Ruben Neves, right?
Yeah, he's still okay. He's still in a good age bracket.
I don't like this. I don't like the way it really seems like they're just trying to push Ansu Fati out of the club. And it seems like a stupid thing to do because Ansu Fati right now, you know, he's on a down. You're not going to get the full value for him. Remember how excited we were about Ansu Fati? We've seen what he can do. So it seems like an odd approach. I don't know who's doing it. I don't know if it's, you know, Matteo Alemany who's on his way out. I don't know if it's Jordi Cruyff. I don't know if this is Mendes and his servant saying, wait, let me put down a baseline offer of what can happen and let's see others come out of the woodwork. Let's generate more offers for Ansu. I don't know. But
could be a long summer for Barcelona in terms of transfer rumors and everything.
Jean-Michel Aulas is stepping down as Lyon president after 36 years in charge. Jules, give us some context.
Yeah, it's really
because it's really remarkable career, remarkable range.
Yeah,
for Lyon.
Yeah. And not just that, because they keep breaking the story this morning that he was leaving when he should have stayed another 2.5 years, or 2 years, really, because when the club was bought by John Textor last June, or kind of last June, but then going on to the start of the season, Aulas was signed a contract to stay 3 years as a kind of in a governance role, if you want. So you stay president for 3 years, and you help out with John Textor, who wants to kind of restructure the club, all of that. It was not supposed to leave in that way on a morning in May when the season is not over and Lyon are still fighting to finish fifth place and qualify for, albeit the Europa Conference League, but still in Europe. So this shows the tension within the club between John Textor and Jean-Michel Aulas, not on the same page at all. Textor wanting to restructure the club already quite massively, quite brutally in a way. Aulas, clearly, after being here, he bought the club 36 years ago when they were in the second division, full of debts. He took them to be the best club in France for many years.
Seven in a row,
one of the best clubs in Europe. If you remember, they were always in the Champions League semi-final, quarter-final at least. So this is not the ending he wanted.
And he also built a huge women's operation, turning them into arguably at the time, or for a couple of years anyway, the best women's team in the world.
Yeah, and still now amongst probably the top three, top five best women's team in the world, going into the US and, you know, buying the reign and stuff like that. It's great what he did, and he's going to get a 10 million euro paycheck to say goodbye, which, I know money doesn't buy you happiness, but it's still a good compensation. However, this is certainly not the way, and seeing the character that he is, the way that he wanted his kind of career in football to end, because I don't think there's any way back now after that. So it's a very, very sad day in a way. Quite interesting to see sometimes when a club is bought by someone who has very different ideas, even if at the beginning there's an agreement, like it was in this case for 3 years, then it doesn't mean anything really.
Yeah, I think, so this Textor fella obviously owns a chunk of Crystal Palace as well.
Yeah.
He tried to buy Benfica at one point, which I don't even know you can buy Benfica, isn't it? Like the way it's set up.
But,
it just seems nothing's easy or simple with him. I mean, to me, it seems the guy built the... I know he's probably brought... I don't know what he does for a living, but I'm assuming he's another hedgy private equity type, right?
Yeah, finance.
Well, if you buy a club, you don't want to keep the founder around. Or you only want to do it in certain circumstances, right? Mm. And if you keep him around, it's because you want him to actually run the club. So I would have had no problem if Textor had said, hey, Jean-Michel, here's the offer. You know, you can be honorary president with no say.
Yeah, he was still on the board, yeah.
That makes sense. But to do this, to have him sign that three-year contract and then be surprised when you're at loggerheads,
it's strange.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No. I agree. Ajax played a 0-0 draw with Alkmaar, but 154 visiting fans were not present. Gab, they were arrested before kickoff on their way to the ground.
Yeah, and so to me this is interesting because I think this is nearly unprecedented, and I'm sorry to have to talk about abuse of this kind again on the show, but so Ajax kind of self-identify for historical reasons. They call themselves the Jews.
Yeah.
And some opposing fans use that as a reason to sing anti-Semitic songs against Ajax. Ajax, by the way, it's not a historically Jewish club. They've had Jewish presidents. They've had Jewish players like Svart and whatever back in the day. That link isn't so much there, but people wear this kind of like a badge of pride, of otherness or whatever. It's a complicated sociological discussion. But these Alkmaar fans, I think they were riding a bus or a train or something, and they kept singing this, singing these anti-Semitic songs about Ajax. They get out and they're all arrested. I think we need to have very, very clear rules. This is obviously away from the football pitch. I don't think it's desirable in the kind of city I would want to live in to have 150 people walking down the street singing an anti-Semitic song, even if it is in a football context or whatever. I don't think that's acceptable. Equally, I'm assuming this happens most weeks when Ajax play. So it's not like all of a sudden you can say, now we're going to enforce this.
We've heard it before.
So, but it is a step, and I think it's a step towards a better situation and a better environment, certainly on the streets.
And we've said that the atmosphere at games in the Eredivisie scene has been quite toxic at times. We saw the scenes in the Kuip, for example.
Semi-final
of the Kuip, Feyenoord, PSV, Ajax, all of that. Something has to be done.
Celtic are champions in Scotland for the second straight year, which also coincides with Ange Postecoglou's arrival at the club. Jules, I'm a big fan of big Ange, and when he arrived, he was subject to some anti-Aussie prejudice, let's face it.
And I think he proved a lot of doubters, let's say, because I don't think he proved people wrong. He was a really good coach before, but showed, especially in the style of football, this game was not won in style. They won, Kyogo scored again, he had an amazing season again. But the brand of football has been great, and it's their 53rd title, only two now behind Rangers on 55. Well done, they can still win.
When you add in all the silly cups, it might even be more than Real Madrid's 100 titles that you were banging on.
So I looked it up the other day, I think there's 6 clubs in the history who have won more than 100 trophies, two of them being Celtic and Rangers.
Right.
Now Real Madrid, I can't remember, I'm sorry, who the others are. But yes, so you see, here you go. Super Clásico time in Argentina, Gabby. An injury time penalty from Miguel Borja gives River a 1-0 win over Boca, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, as you would expect, tense game. Very, very nice scenes at the Monumental, or whatever
amazing
it's called these days. But basically, they score in the third minute of injury time. It's a penalty.
It's a light pen as well.
It is. I think they had a better shot for the previous one at the other end.
But
as they celebrate, somebody celebrates too close to the bench. There's a massive brawl. In the end, 7 red cards.
Wow.
4 to players on the pitch, which finishes 10-8. 1 to a coach, and the other 2 to, I think they were Boca substitutes. So, hey, Super Clásico, man. I don't know what you expect.
But Boca, terrible season. They're 13th in the table when River and De Michelis as a manager flying at the top. It's tough, tough for Boca.
Super Martin De Michelis. I want to see him in Europe at some point. Jules, I think we have a new candidate for miss of the season. Maybe miss of the decade in the Lille game.
Oh, Rémi Cabella. I mean, what an amazing season he's had, although he had a shocking miss earlier in the season as well in the game that they lost. But this one against Reims on Saturday, the XG is 0.96. Gab, is literally the cross from the right-hand side. The goal is here. The line is here. He's here. Like, he cannot miss. And yet, he hits it with the inside of his left foot and the ball goes towards the post and the goalkeeper instead of going straight into the goal. It's unreal. It's an unreal miss. They lost 1-0.
It is worth your time going to find this. This game could cost them a place in Europe.
Yeah, of course.
0.96. Like, if you score, the XG is 1.00. That means 24 times out of 25, that ball goes in the back of the net. Unreal stuff.
Incredible. Urawa Red Diamonds are Asian champions for the third time, Gab. They won the final against Al Hilal.
They did. This is over 2 legs. It was 1-1 in the first leg in Saudi. 1-0 in the second leg.
Yeah.
I just watched this on television. Tremendous scene. Tremendous choreography from the fans.
The atmosphere, it was brilliant.
You know, people wonder, why do they make this 2 legs? Why don't they just do it 1 leg and stuff? I think it's obvious. There's travel restrictions and whatever. They want the color of the 2 sides. But I think Al Hilal, who, you know, when you look at it from their perspective, they're doing great in the in the Saudi League against Cristiano Ronaldo's team.
Of course,
Al Nassr. And they could have done a big double. And I think they're going to feel that they kind of threw this one away.
And it's a non-goal by Andre Carrillo, the Peruvian forwards, which even must be even more gutted to lose a final like that.
Yeah, and a stupid own goal.
Completely stupid.
Just side footed. Yeah. Not difficult.
Yeah.
Jules, that brings us to an end.
Wow.
Well, we got to come back on Thursday.
Oh, yes.
Because you know what? It's the champion. Until then, love the game. Love your neighbor.
Love yourself.